Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome, everyone. Today, we're doing a deep dive into a really impactful book, Morgan Housel's The Psychology of Money. It's one of those reads that genuinely seems to shift how people think about money, about success. It moves the focus from, you know, spreadsheets and numbers.
Right, away from all the complex finance stuff.
Exactly. Towards something much more, well, human, our own behavior.
Okay, so let's get into it. Housel's main point, his core idea, is that we often treat getting good with money like it's physics or math. But he argues pretty convincingly, I think, that it's really much more like psychology. It's a soft skill.
Mm-hmm.
His thesis is surprisingly simple, but wow, so often overlooked.
Uh-huh.
Doing well with money has very little to do with how smart you are.
Yeah.
And basically everything to do with how you behave.
And that's why you, listening, should really care. Because it tackles this fundamental puzzle. Why do really brilliant people, you know, doctors, engineers, executives, sometimes make terrible financial mistakes? We think you need a PhD in finance. But Housel shows that simple, everyday psychological skills, patience, humility, they actually count for way more.
It's about embracing that human element, the messiness of it all. And Morgan Housel, he comes at this with a solid background. He's a columnist for The Motley Fool, The Wall Street Journal,
mm-hmm.
respected voices. Now he's a partner at the Collaborative Fund. So he's seen things.
Yeah. And what I find really interesting is where his authority comes from. It's not like predicting the next market crash or giving stock tips.
No, not at all.
It's rooted in behavioral finance, in history, and honestly, just great storytelling. He digs into the why behind our money habits, the greed, the fear, the ego, not just the how of investing.
And he uses history almost like a behavioral lab. He looks across different eras,
yeah.
different market conditions,
yeah.
and pulls out these patterns in human behavior that just keep repeating.
Yeah.
Timeless stuff.
So his insights aren't about, you know, what to do next week. They're about understanding ourselves, which applies whether it's 1924 or 2024. Okay, so let's talk about the book itself. The core idea is that personal finance is much more personal than it is finance.
Right.
It's not a step-by-step guide on asset allocation. It's more like a journey through about 20 short, easy-to-read chapters, each one focusing on one of these timeless behavioral ideas.
And the main goal, really, is to shift your focus away from trying to squeeze out every last percentage point of return mm-hmm. or finding the perfect investment mix and towards mastering the psychological side, things like humility, serious patience, and just having a really long-term view.
The idea being, if you get your head right, the financial stuff tends to follow.
Pretty much, yeah. Control your behavior, and the outcomes improve dramatically.
And a really key part of getting your head right, something he introduces early, is this crucial difference between being rich and being wealthy. Being rich, that's usually visible. High income, fancy car, big house, you could see it.
But being wealthy, that's different. That's the high net worth. It's the assets you don't see.
It's the money you didn't spend on the fancy car. It's invisible.
Understanding that distinction, really internalizing it, that kind of unlocks the rest of the book's wisdom.
Okay, let's dig into some of those specific chapters, those aha moments. You mentioned the personal aspect.
Yeah, let's start there. Chapter one is called No One's Crazy. And the idea is, well, maybe that financial decision someone made looks completely nuts to you. Like maybe your uncle burying cash in the backyard or a friend taking huge risks in crypto.
Right, things you'd never do.
Exactly. But Housel says, from their perspective, given their unique life experiences, their background, the economic times they live through, it probably makes perfect sense to them.
So someone who grew up during hyperinflation is going to have a totally different relationship with debt and saving than someone who only saw, say, the tech boom of the 90s.
Precisely. Their crazy is just a result of a different history, a different set of formative experiences. We need a bit of humility about judging others' choices.
And that humility connects right into another chapter, chapter 16, You and Me. This one warns us about comparing ourselves to others financially.
Oh, that's a dangerous game.
Totally. Because Housel points out, everyone's playing a different game. You might be saving for retirement in 30 years. The person next door might be a day trader trying to make money by lunchtime. Your goals, your time frame, how much risk you can take, it's all unique. Copying someone else's strategy when they're playing a different game, that's just asking for trouble.
Okay, so moving from our personal context.
Yeah.
We also have to grapple with these big unseen forces, like luck and risk. That's chapter two. Housel sees them as basically two sides of the exact same coin, and they play these huge, often hidden roles in how things turn out financially. Way more than we like to admit.
We tend to attribute success purely to skill and failure purely to bad decisions.
Right. But luck and risk are always there.
Yeah.
He says we need to be humble when things go well for us and maybe more compassionate when they don't go well for others.
He uses the Bill Gates example, right?
Yeah, it's a classic. Obviously, Gates is incredibly smart driven.
Mm-hmm.
But a huge factor in his success was being one of literally a handful of high school kids in the world in 1968 who had access to a school computer.
Mm-hmm.
That was just monumental luck. Being in the right place at the right time with access to a rare resource, it gave him an unbelievable head start. We often downplay those kinds of lucky breaks.
And that ties into another fascinating idea in Chapter 6, Tails, You Win.
Ah, yes. The power of the extremes.
Explain that one.
So the idea is that in many systems, especially investing or things like venture capital, a very small number of events, the long tail events account for the vast majority of the results.
Like in VC, most startups fail.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Maybe 9 out of 10 investments go nowhere or lose money. But the one that hits, the one that becomes the next Google or Amazon,
mm-hmm.
its success is so massive it pays for all the failures and then some, exponentially so.
So the takeaway for, say, regular investors...
It means you can actually be wrong most of the time and still come out way ahead if you're diversified and, crucially, if you're patient enough. You need to stay invested long enough for those rare, powerful tail events, those big winners, to actually happen and work their magic in your portfolio.
But that patience, it's hard, especially when we see others seemingly getting rich quick, which brings us to what Housel calls the paradox of consumption.
Mm-hmm. And the man in the car paradox. Chapter 8. This one really makes you think.
Okay, so you see someone drive by in a really expensive, flashy car, a Ferrari maybe?
Yep.
Housel asks, what are you actually thinking about? Are you thinking, wow, that driver must be an amazing, respectable person?
Probably not. More likely you're thinking, wow, I'd look cool driving that car.
Or maybe you just admire the car itself.
Exactly. You're projecting yourself onto it or just appreciating the object.
Yeah.
The driver is almost irrelevant.
So the paradox is that people buy luxury goods hoping to gain admiration and respect from others. But it rarely works that way. People don't see your fancy stuff and admire you. They use your stuff as a benchmark for their own desires.
Which leads perfectly into Chapter 9. Wealth is what you don't see.
This goes back to that rich versus wealthy idea.
Totally. Richness is the visible stuff, the income, the spending. Wealth. Wealth is the car not bought, the upgrade not taken.
It's the money you saved and invested instead. It's hidden. It's financial assets that haven't been converted into visible stuff yet.
And that wealth, that unseen accumulation, comes directly from sacrificing today's potential consumption for tomorrow's security and freedom.
Okay, so if we pull back from the individual chapters, Housel weaves these ideas into some really powerful core themes, right? These big behavioral shifts he wants us to make.
Definitely. Several big ones stand out.
The first one is maybe the most confronting. It's behavior trumps intelligence.
Yeah, this one really challenges our assumptions. He uses these great contrasting stories.
Like Ronald Reed.
Right, Ronald Reed. The janitor and gas station attendant from Vermont lived a super simple life, saved consistently, invested in solid blue chip stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And when he died, people were shocked to learn he'd quietly amassed an $8 million fortune.
And then you compare him to Richard Fuscone.
Yeah, the total opposite.
Right.
Harvard educated, high flying Merrill Lynch executive, made tons of money, but lived extravagantly, took on huge leverage.
And got completely wiped out bankrupt in the 2008 financial crisis.
The lesson is stark. Simple, patient, consistent behavior beat genius-level IQ, fancy education, and complex strategies.
It seems obvious, but why is it so hard for smart people to accept?
Maybe because intelligence often craves complexity,
like yeah.
for the secret edge, when sometimes the most effective strategy is just, well, boring consistency.
Which leads to the second theme, the incredible power of time and survival.
Mm-hmm. Housel really hammers this home. Compounding interest is powerful. But it's counterintuitive because it's not linear. It's exponential. He points to Warren Buffett. Everyone knows Buffett is rich. But most of his vast fortune was actually accumulated after he turned 50, even after 65.
Wow. So it wasn't just about high returns year after year.
High returns help, sure. But the real key, Housel argues, is survival. Staying in the game, not getting wiped out, not being forced to sell at the worst possible time during a crash. You have to endure the downturns to benefit from the long-term uptrends. Survival allows time for compounding to do its magic.
Okay, theme three completely reframes the goal of having money in the first place. Freedom is the ultimate goal.
This is maybe my favorite takeaway. He argues the best thing money can buy, the highest dividend it pays, isn't more stuff.
It's control over your time.
Exactly. He puts it beautifully. The ability to wake up every morning and say, I can do whatever I want today. That's the ultimate purpose of wealth. Flexibility, autonomy.
Not necessarily yachts and private jets, but just options.
Options and control. Yeah. And the final big theme we should touch on is the idea of being reasonable rather than rational. This is from chapter 11.
Okay, what's the difference there?
Well, rational might mean figuring out the absolute mathematically perfect optimal financial plan on paper, squeezing every last drop of efficiency out of your money.
Sounds good.
In theory. But what if that perfectly rational plan involves, say, having zero emergency savings because statistically you're unlikely to need it this year, or taking on huge leverage because it maximizes potential returns?
Okay, I see the problem. That sounds incredibly stressful.
Right. Can you actually stick to that plan when life throws you a curveball or the market tanks? Probably not. You'll panic.
So reasonable means?
Reasonable means aiming for a good enough plan, one that's maybe slightly less efficient on paper, but that you can actually live with psychologically,
yeah.
A plan you can adhere to through thick and thin for decades.
So it's about endurance, not just optimization.
Precisely. Emotional endurance wins over spreadsheet perfectionism in the long run.
The book is just packed with lines like that, these memorable nuggets of wisdom. We should share a few.
Definitely. They really capture the mindset shift.
Okay, first, obviously, the core thesis. Doing well with money has a little to do with how smart you are and a lot to do with how you behave. Simple, but profound.
Yeah, you can't hear that one enough. And related to the consumption paradox, this one's blunt. Spending money to show people how much money you have is the fastest way to have less money.
Ouch. So true, though. It just perfectly nails the futility of trying to buy status.
Mm-hmm. And this last one, it reframes how we should think about market volatility, those scary downturns.
Okay.
The price of investing success is not immediately obvious. It's not a dollar amount, but a currency of volatility, fear, uncertainty, and regret. You have to be willing to pay it.
Whoa. So market drops aren't a fine you pay for doing something wrong.
No. They're the fee you pay for admission. The cost required to access the potential for long-term growth that markets offer. You have to expect it and endure it.
That changes everything about how you react during a correction.
It really does. So
yeah.
This all sounds great, but it begs the question, how do we actually apply these ideas day to day? What are the practical steps?
Good question. The first application, and maybe the most empowering one, is to prioritize your savings rate.
Hmm.
Housel stresses that the gap between what you earn and what you spend your savings rate is the financial lever you have the most control over. It doesn't matter as much what the market's doing, or even to some extent, what your income is. Saving more gives you immediate flexibility and options. Focus there first.
Okay, that makes sense. Application two is crucial for that survival theme we talked
yeah.
about. Build room for error, or you know, a margin of safety.
Stop trying to optimize every single dollar.
Exactly. Life is full of surprises. That's actually another chapter title.
Hmm.
Surprises. Job losses happen. Unexpected expenses pop up. Markets crash. You need buffers. A solid emergency fund. Maybe being a bit conservative in your investment return assumptions. Don't run things so tight that one piece of bad luck derails your entire plan. That margin of safety is really an investment in your own peace of mind.
And the third practical step flows from that idea of freedom. Define enough.
Ah, the moving goalpost problem.
Yes. You have to consciously decide what financial security and contentment look like for you right now. Otherwise, you risk falling into the trap of never enough.
Like Rajat Gupta, the former McKinsey CEO he mentions, made millions, but got caught up in insider trading, chasing even more.
Right. If you don't define what enough is, you'll just keep chasing more, comparing yourself to others, and never actually feel secure or free.
Mm.
Using money to buy that feeling of enough, that's a good use of money.
So when you put it all together, the real paradigm shift Housel offers is seeing money fundamentally as a tool.
Not the end goal itself.
Right. It's a tool to finance a life of freedom, autonomy, and flexibility. Not necessarily just accumulating more stuff or status. So focus on the things you can actually control.
Okay.
Your own behavior, how long you plan to stay invested, and critically, how much you save.
For me, wrapping this up, the biggest insight was realizing that building wealth isn't some exclusive club for finance wizards. It's actually, well, kind of democratic. It's accessible to almost anyone through consistent, discipline, sometimes even slightly boring behavior over a long period. That's empowering.
Yeah, I agree. And maybe the final thought to leave people with, something Hazel touches on, is that we change over time.
Our goals, our values, they aren't static.
Exactly. What you want in your 20s is probably very different from what you'll want in your 40s or 60s. He discusses this in chapter 14, you'll change.
Mm.
So if we know our future selves will likely have different priorities, maybe even ones we can't imagine today, how do we build a financial plan now?
Good question.
How do we create a plan that offers the maximum possible flexibility and adaptability for that future unpredictable self? Maybe that commitment to lifelong flexibility, maybe that's the ultimate financial discipline to cultivate.
Something to definitely think about. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.